number one doctor.
Log Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome once again. You're with Real Talk with the number one doctors. It's Reverend Dr. Floyd D. Harris Jr., based on the West Coast of California. And also we have Dr. Gene Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia. We are back on the air tonight. It has been a while since we have been on the air. We're excited to be back on the air. We have a special show for you tonight. But first of all, I would like to give some condolences to one of our own, Miss Neal. Miss Neal was someone who was from Atlanta, Georgia, that we met on the air. She was a sister who we gave a radio show to, and she passed away about a week ago. She had a massive heart attack, and so we were just you know, kind of shocked in regards to her passing. She was a revolutionary sister who really believed in fighting for justice for our people. She, you know, had a brother who name was Larry Neal, who the government killed. And she was, you know, really trying to seek justice for her brother. And just unfortunate that she had a massive heart attack at home. And the paramedics were called, and they tried to revive her, but she expired. And so just want to give a shout out to her family. Thought maybe we would, out of respect, have just 1 minute of silence for Miss Mary Neal, and then we'll go into our show. Okay, we're back again with Real Talk with the number one doctor. That's Dr. Harris and Dr. Gene Kennedy. We're waiting on her to call in. She's on Atlanta time right now. She will be going back to Atlanta here real soon. But we're just excited to be back on the air tonight. We, as everyone know that I've been dealing with police brutality for over 27 years as of this past 24th of August of my birthday. Been an international civil rights leader. And Fresno Police Department have been not doing things quite well. We have been trying to deal with policy. We have been trying to communicate with them about, you know, better community policing. We have been trying to be able to sit down and have a dialogue with them. But it just it has gotten to the point right now to where things are just out of hand right now. The latest shooting that we have had with Brother Noble here in Fresno by our Fresno Police Department. And people are outraged. They're outraged of what has happened. They're outraged on the use of force that was used to kill our brother. There was no negotiations. There was nothing. There was not anything that that the Fresno Police Department did to try to save his life. had a chance to text me my mother today. There's a protest tomorrow at the Cellon Arena here in Fresno. I believe that Dyer is has some type of anniversary that he is doing for his career. And people are outraged right now. They're outraged because we have been telling him over and over and over that things are out of hand. And that I think there's Dr. Kennedy right now. Oh, hold on one second. Okay, we found Dr. Kennedy. She's be calling in right now. With these hot shows that we deal with, sometimes the networks don't want to let us on. And so, but anyway, I just talked to her. She's calling in right now. But anyway, like I was saying, that we've had Brother Noble, who was 19 years old, was shot and killed by officers at a traffic stop in Fresno on June 25th. Police said that they had pulled him over as they were investigating reports of a man walking around with a rifle. Also, it states that officers said they believe at the time that Noble was armed. He was only carrying a small plastic container. This is a report from the LA Times. And it says an officer then shot Noble twice with his handgun as Noble was lying on the ground. Two officers instructed him to keep his hands up. When he moved his hand, his arm, the first officer fired again. And so that's kind of where we're at right now. I also put the video that was taken by someone at the site. But I want to say again that there will be a protest tomorrow at the Cellon Arena. Tomorrow I will be attending this event tomorrow. In solidarity with our sister, the event starts tomorrow, I believe, at 5 o'clock. They're at the Cellon Arena, downtown Fresno. And so we will be out there. We'll be out there in numbers. I'm sending out requests to the African-American community and all of our supporters. We're putting this on blast right now to our people all over the world, including London and everywhere else. I believe right now we have Dr. Gene Kennedy on the line. Dr. Gene Kennedy, are you there? Welcome to your show, Real Talk with the Number One Doctors. We have already introduced you from Atlanta, Georgia. We thank you for coming out here this summer. We're saddened that you've come here and had to endure all the silliness that's going on with our police department, but you're an organizational psychologist, and that is your field to dissect this type of behavior. So welcome to your show, Dr. Gene Kennedy.
Well, thank you very much, Reverend Harris. It's a pleasure to be back on the air with you again, and it's unfortunate that it's under these circumstances that a life has been taken yet again. But we will continue the dialogue. We will continue to figure out how to unweave this intersection of issues that are going on. It is indeed an intersection today with the ongoing brutality, unnecessary killings from the police department, their failure to come out publicly and admit and denounce those bad behaviors that their peers are doing, and at the same time for our community at large to get a sense as to where are we today? Where is the peace officer? We were raised growing up to know that police were peace officers, and that when you did something wrong, that you were arrested peacefully. But it seems to me today the behaviors of our police officers are one of as if they're running down. Everyone is a felon. Everyone is a violent person. It just seems that they're treating everyone the same, and we have to question what is the training that they're having. Why do they have so much fear going on towards a civilian person? So, yes, we'll be able to talk about that tonight. And again, my condolences, and on behalf of Georgia, we send out our condolences to this mother who is in so much pain, trying to make sense of this situation, trying to figure out what happened. We woke up one morning and we went to bed with this crisis, still trying to figure out what the heck took place with her son. And we are behind her. We're all asking the same questions. And so Georgia sends out their supports and their condolences as well.
Thank you, Dr. Kennedy. I was in contact with the mother this evening. She reached out to me. Young activist who just jumped on the scene, Justice, was a friend of Brother Noble, and so connected us. And it was just... you know, I always say that it's always about timing. You may want to do something, but it's not the right time. And so I think that it was all in God's time that we connected. It was interesting. You know, she really, you know, said, hey, you know, I'm reaching out, you know, to the African-American community. And you know, how can we, band together, you know? Because I'm sure, you know, with the pain and that she's having right now, enduring this horrible time right now, that she don't want this to happen to anyone else. And so I just, you know, have all the respect for her community, friends and family, and we just give our condolences from Real Talk with the Number One Doctors and our listeners from all across the world. And so, Dr. Kennedy, I kind of wanted to dissect the readings of what I read. I don't think you was on the line when I read this. But again, tomorrow, I believe at 5 o'clock, we're going to be having a protest at the Selling Arena. At the Selling Arena tomorrow, Chief Dyer is having some type of recognition gala, something to that language, and I don't know who's the primary organizer behind it, but I know the mother has invited us to come out. And I had plans to do other things, but I'm going to go ahead and put that to the side because I feel, you know, for this family, buried many young men who's been shot by police, killed by police. And so I know the pain that she's going through, and she wants justice. But Dr. Kennedy, as an organizational psychologist, I want to ask you this question right now. And there's so many questions that I have that when the information went out over the say the police radio, it says that there was someone who was possibly walking around with a rifle or something, and the police came in contact with Brother Noble, and it said officers believed at that time that Noble was armed. Then it says he was only carrying a small plastic container by the LA Times report. And then it says that an officer then shot twice with his handgun as Noble was lying on the ground. Two officers instructed him to keep his hands up. Now, understand, he's already shot. He's already shot, and he's on the ground. When he moved his arm, the first officer fired again. Why was it so, you think it was so necessary? First of all, why do police officers always go to the guns? Why was there no non-lethal guns involved? Tasers, shotgun, beanbags, maybe the canine dog. It seemed like the first resort was to take their handgun. And then when you look at the video, Dr. Kennedy, you will see that the officers, if Brother Noble was such dangerous as the report went out on the radio that someone's walking around with a gun, why wasn't they at cover? Why didn't they cover themselves? They were just walking up on him with these guns and come to find out that he didn't have a gun. So how do you dissect that right now?
Well, that's a lot. There's a lot of conversations, a lot of information that's there, and we can only peel this onion one layer at a time. Don't know if we can get through all of it in the show, but we'll do the best we can. You know, let me say, first of all, for the record, we are having this conversation on the radio about a white man, young man, being killed by the police officer, by a white police officer at that, only because the camera that the police was wearing picked up the incident. I honestly believe, as a organizational psychologist, that had this shooting taken place without the cameras being involved, this family would be suffering today, but it would not have made the headlines. And so we see that the cameras is the one that's really bringing the conversation to light, that this camera was on. Because typically we have been reading that the police have been conveniently turning off these cameras, these body cameras. And for whatever the reasons was, they chose not to turn this one off, and all hell is broken loose because we're able to see the details on that. If the police are trained to de-escalate threats, to eliminate the threat, to eradicate the danger, if they are, and they have their own language, and I really don't want to even quote their language, because I think that the police has their own communication ways of saying things. Their language is very coded. They speak almost like they're attorneys themselves, that even an attorney sometimes has to go in there and figure out what the heck are they saying. But if they are trained to de-escalate any kind of threat, it would seem to me that the way in which they handled this matter was not handled in a way that they identified a threat. First of all, you just said, Reverend Harris, that if indeed the police felt threatened, they would not have been out in the open the way they were. They would have been taking cover behind their police door or behind their police vehicle. So right there is a dichotomy. How do you feel threatened, but yet you're out in the public? You're way out without any kind of protection, speaking to a young man who you think is a threat because he's not showing you his hands together. And so right there, we have to look at that and says, yes, how can you say you feel threatened and yet you were out in the public with that? So that's an area that we really have to dissect. And then the other thing we have to look at, Brother Harris, is that all the devices that they have with them, they had enough devices to have been able to lower the threat, very much so. They had rubber bullets on them, I would hope. For sure they had tasers on them. For sure they had a fourth police officer, a four-legged police officer, the canine dog. And yet they chose not to use any of these items, any of these other areas to de-escalate the threats. Instead of that, they went straight for the gun and the bullets, and we know that bullets kill. They say bullets don't kill people. People are the ones who kill people. Well, neither here nor there. The police chose to use their guns with bullets that would kill. They did not choose to use rubber guns, bullets. They did not choose to use their taser. They did not choose to send the dog out to somehow detain this young man and bring him down, they chose to use their bullets. And we have to wonder why. Now, I don't want to go too far off the subject, but we do have to also bring into the conversation the so-called accusation that this young man was trying to do caught by suicide. And for goodness sake, I tell you, I really have to count to 10 when I speak to people who are affiliated with police departments, who work at police departments, who are married to police officers, who have family members who are affiliated with police officers, who ministers who have passed, who have members in their church who are police officers, even city council men and women who have been part of the police force who are now turned politicians. The whole lot of them. I really have to find myself practicing tolerance. Because it's so easy for them to grab this line of conversation and says, well, it's suicide by cop. What I don't understand, Reverend Harrison, can I go there? Maybe can I just go there on the suicide by cop and then let's go back to this other area? Is it all right for me to go there, sir?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, please do.
Oh. So we have the situation where they're now pushing this line of conversation that possibly this young man wanted to commit suicide. They've even got the gall to go back into his Facebook all the way back to when he was 14 years old. So you talk about violating his rights, both as an adult and both as a child, to protect him as even a juvenile. And so there's many violations going on there. But here's my point. The police are trained, and I'm talking as a psychologist, an organizational psychologist. Police are trained to talk a person down from suicide. If this young man was on the rooftop of a building, that same police would have been trying every which way to talk him down from not jumping to commit suicide. If this young man was at a bridge, the Golden State Bridge, wherever, and he was going to jump, the same police officer or officers, S on the end, would have been trying every which way to talk him down from jumping to his death. Well, now I have to ask you and the listening audience, please help me. Help me, help me, help me to understand this. And I'm a psychologist. I study behavior. But help me to understand this. Why is it that in this case, if indeed they thought that this young man was going to commit suicide by having the police shoot them, why did they not use other devices to eliminate the threat of a suicide taking place? Why did they have to assist him with the suicide? They had tasers. They had a dog that could have, a police trained animal that could have brought Dellum down on the ground. They had other officers there that could have prevented him, tackled him. So many things they could have done to not accommodate the suicide by threat. If you really thought, because this is their line of argument, if you thought that this young man was going to commit suicide, why assist him? Why support him? You don't support anybody else when they're trying to commit suicide. You don't support the person who's up on the roof. You don't go, oh, let me help you. Let me push you, make it easy for you. Come on, let me give you a little push so you can fly over the edge and commit suicide. You don't go to the person on the bridge and says, hey, let me help you. Let me push you over the bridge and make it easier for you. So pray, tell me why it would be that these three officers would have decided, oh, looks like this guy's trying to commit suicide. And that's the reason why they're desperately trying to go through his Facebook and anything else that they can come up with to prove that he wanted to commit suicide. In fact, if that is their argument, then even more so should they be held accountable for killing, aiding and abetting in this murder. They also assisted him then. If they really believe that form of argument, then they are just as guilty in second-degree murder for allowing this to take place. Because I'm telling you, Reverend Harris, if you and I decide we're going to bump somebody off and we come together in this collaboration to do so, we are both guilty. Even if I didn't pull the gun, I am guilty because I knew that you plan to do this. And by the way, you notice how I put that on you, right? And and so therefore, we would be held accountable, equally accountable. Then you're going to tell me that you have three trained officers who believe this young man is going to commit suicide. You see, their argument is so faulty. And I think they have such a great attorney who has no problem speaking out on these deficiencies that are taking place. It's a total mess. It's a total mess. So I wanted to talk out about the suicide by cop because, again, I mentioned all these people who are affiliated in some way with a police officer in their life, be it family, be it a congregant, be it a neighbor, and they're so quick to take on this line of argument and say, hey, you know, the kid was trying to commit suicide. Well, think about it. Just think about it for a minute. Really? If you thought that he was trying to commit suicide, why would you have supported him in his endeavors and not deter him from committing the suicide?
Well, there you have Dr. Jean Kennedy. Dr. Jean Kennedy, the organizational psychologist from Atlanta, Georgia. She is dissecting what has happened here with our police department here in Mississippi, Fresno. You know, I don't call Fresno Fresno. I call it Mississippi. We're at our half minute mark. We ask those who on the line, please stay on. If you hang up at our 30-minute mark, you will not be able to get back on. Our show is for 45 minutes. Real talk with the number one doctors, Reverend Harris, Reverend Dr. Floyd E. Harris Jr., and Dr. Jean Kennedy from Atlanta, Georgia. And tomorrow there will be a protest. Protest tomorrow at the Sullivan Arena. Jerry Dyer, he's having a gala tomorrow at 6 p.m. And so, you know, I like to get there early, around 5. We're going to be, you know, having pots and pans and crying babies and bullhorns and drums and really making noise so the world can hear what is going on here in Mississippi, Fresno. We do have a caller online. I don't know. We'll just check with them and see if they would like to speak. Maybe they're just here to listen. 5309. Phone number. And so again, Dr. Kennedy, we are here in Fresno again. We're coming up on our last 14 seconds of our show. I'd like to thank those who are listening online. Please go back to the archives. I'm going to try to see if we can do a live show tomorrow on the ground at this protest tomorrow. I'm going to try my hardest to see if we can get Brother Patch to find a landline to go out and be on the ground zero, to really interview people who are there, who are concerned, who is angry, mad. People are saying they want new leadership here in Fresno. And so we will be out there tomorrow at the Sullivan Arena tomorrow. I'm going to go to 5309. I don't know if you would like to speak. If not, it's okay. If you do, it's okay. Welcome to Real Talk with the number one doctors. 5309, good evening. Would you like to say something, or you just want to listen?
Yes, I would. My name is Lynn Eagle Feather. I'm calling from Denver, Colorado. My son was violently killed in front of 18 children. He was murdered last July, and I was on a radio blog show with Mary Neal. Mary loves justice.
Yes.
And she introduced me. I used to do shows with her on mass incarceration of the mentally ill. Before I lost my son, and I just want to, I was in shock when I heard of her passing, and I saw this, just now I turned on my Facebook, and I saw this, and I would just love to be on more shows with other people and continue the legacy of her fighting for the human rights demand of our people of color and the mistreatment of them in prison as well as on the streets.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, my sister, for calling in. And be sure, before we get off the line or when we do, if you and or hit Reverend Harris up on the Facebook, because we do want to continue her show. You are right with her passing. There's a big gap now in that area, and we want to continue the legacy that she started. And we want to be able to do what we can on our part. And so be sure to contact Reverend Harris so that we can get a hold of you and see how we can continue to do the show. We don't have a way to get into her show according to the way it was set up, but I know that she would want someone to continue to do the work that she has done. Reverend Harris has been a guest multiple times on her show, myself, yourself, and so we want to continue to do a show of sorts that would continue to allow the word to get out. So I just wanted to say that to you so we don't lose you off of the air after tonight's show. So be sure to reach out, give us your contact information, and then we will talk about what we can do to continue the show. And anybody else who might be listening that knows Sister Mary Neal, please hit Brother Harris on his Facebook and let us have a conversation so that we don't lose time or lose gap or lose ground. A tremendous message that she brought to our attention about the mass incarceration and particularly on the mentally ill that continues to be abused by this police system. So I wanted to say that, to you. And our condolences for you also losing a loved one in this situation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, caller. I have your phone number. I wrote your phone number down, so I will be in contact with you. Again, condolences to your situation. We are very compassionate about this type of behavior from police departments. Dr. Kennedy, I was talking to – I found Sister Ethel's phone number, and hopefully we'll get on a conference call with her. And I was asking Sister Ethel today, it seems that some people across the country, maybe it could be some of our white brothers, it could be black, don't see the solidarity with the Black Lives Matter. You know, our topic of our show is Real Talk with the Number One Doctors, Dr. Harris, Dr. Jean Kennedy. We stand in solidarity with white, black, and brown. What is, speaking to Sister Ethel today, she's in the Bay Area, is this a race issue that's going on? I mean, just to be very honest, some of our white brothers say, Black Lives Matter is a racist organization or a racist term. And they say, well, why, how come all lives don't matter? Why are you just saying black? And can you chime in on that just a little bit before we go off our show tonight?
Yes, I'm so glad you mentioned that. I was hoping that we could at least cover that because this is going to be a number of shows to help educate. So even in the situation with Nolan, Daryl Nolan, some here in Clovis, California have been saying, we don't understand this whole Black Lives Matter thing. It's racist. They don't understand what we're going through, and it should be all lives matter. We need to understand something, ladies and gentlemen. According to some data, and you can find this in so many different places, let me paraphrase. Some of the data, one of the data talk about unarmed black people who were killed by police. They're being killed by at least five times, is where some of the data is shown, at least five times the rate of unarmed. And this is in 2015. We're in 2016. So the unarmed black people are killed by police at the rate of five times more than that of unarmed whites, even in 2015. So the reason why Black Lives Matters has begun to come out and saying Black Lives Matter is because we've been trying to say to the world at large, if they are killing us at this rate, it's only a matter of time before they start shooting white people. We've been trying to show that Black Lives Matter because from history, and we won't have time to go into the history tonight, but just from history of how black people are being treated in this country, has given police the license to think that they could shoot someone and get away with it. In the case of Darren Noble, let me mention this. One of the things why this is such a familiar situation and why we need to form solidarity with his family is because it is so very similar to what many black families have experienced. When they shot the young man, twice in fact, because it only takes one bullet to bring someone down, but when they shot him twice and then he went down on the ground, the other two bullets that followed thereafter is where Black Lives Matter talks about Black Lives Matter, and in fact, all life matters. It helped us to underline the fact that when we as black people have been shot multiple times, unarmed, and being shot multiple times, and the police gets off time and time again being told by jurors that, oh, they're doing their job, and therefore we are not bringing any charges. The only charge that you can bring oftentimes is a civil suit, and that takes money to find an attorney who's willing to take a wrongful death type situation. And so when we have been talking about Black Lives Matter, it was not to say we feel our life is better than white people. We've been trying to show you the crisis that look what is going on with black people. They try to make us invisible, and yet they are disposing of us by five times more the rate than what they do for white people, even as much as 2015. Now we have an unusual case, and it's not really unusual. The media has just never brought up what's been going on with white people. Because, you see, they know that when it comes to white people, they don't play. Now, look, we don't play either. But white people are not going to play. For example, in Fresno, this white population, and I say more power to them, are intending to take Dyer down. Dyer should know better. He is a white police officer. He should know the minds and the emotions of his own people as if it was a black officer that was taking down a black young man, as if it was a Hispanic officer taking down a Hispanic, because we feel that we bring ourselves into our jobs. Therefore, we ought to have a certain awareness, a certain understanding, a certain empathy. Doing our job, yes, but also understanding, I understand where you're coming from because I've been there, done that. And so the reason why Black Lives Matter has been pushing the envelope and saying, will you listen to us? When you killed Trayvon Martin, that was an incident to say, don't go into gated communities, don't make yourself a police in your community and try to take matters into your own hand. We were trying to get the word out that if you do it to one, you'll do it to all. An injustice to one is an injustice to all. And we are as strong as the weakest link in our community. So when Black Lives Matter has been shouting it from the mountaintop that Black Lives Matter when each time there's a killing, we're not saying that we're better than anybody else. We're not saying that we, you know, have the right to have these conversations and white folks don't have any value in this. To the contrary, this mother is hurting as much as Oscar Grant's mother is hurting today. This mother in Clovis who's lost her son, Dallin Noble, she is in as much pain as if she was a black mother who gave birth to a child. So there's no way a black mother can sit back and say, oh, I don't understand why this white mother is hurting or feeling the pain. Believe me, every black mother embraces this woman. We want to hold her in her arms. We want to bring her close to us and say, sister, we know how you're feeling. We feel your pain. We know what the father of this young man is feeling. Every black man who's lost his son knows exactly what this white father is going through. So when we have used the term Black Lives Matter, it was not meant to be a racist statement. It was designed so that you could take notes and say, look what is going on over here in the corner. And if we can eliminate that particular situation, then we'll have an even playing field. It was never intended to be a racist, to divide the community. And this is why, Reverend Harris, I have to say this on the radio before we go off. I tip my hat to you. I commend you as a minister, which is the right thing to do. You are doing restorative justice right now by reaching out to this family, by them reaching out to you across the aisles and coming together in solidarity and looking at the one common enemy of this situation, which is bad policy that the police department has, that they continue to shoot unarmed people. And we're coming as one voice, black, white, Hispanic, gay, straight, and everything else in between. We are coming with one voice to say it is wrong, it is wrong, it is wrong. It is wrong to shoot an unarmed person. And if you didn't know whether they were armed or not armed, your training is supposed to give you enough to know that this person may be unarmed, not that they could be armed. So we come together on behalf of this family, and Black Lives Matter wants to embrace this, support this group of people who are saying we're hurting right now. And so we're coming together on this under one voice. It's an intersection right now. And this intersection has decided, you know what? No one has a right of way. It is based on courtesy. Whether you came into the intersection before I did, we're giving you the right of way. And we have come together to say, hey, even though I came to this intersection first, we're letting you go ahead, out of courtesy, because we know that there's a hurting family tonight. So look at it, that Black Life Matters is not just saying it is the only life that matters on the planet. We have been taking this opportunity, Black Lives Matter movement, to say, wake up, America, and if they're doing this to black people, it's only a matter of time before they'll start doing it to others. Remember there's a saying in Russia or Germany, when they came for the Jews, nobody said anything. And they just continue to take them and burn them and did all these Holocaust things to them, these awful deaths to them. And then when someone turned around and they started coming for them, that person looked around and found that there was nobody there to support them, because that person never cried out when they needed the help. And so
Dr. Kennedy, we have 30 seconds left, and we just want to give a shout-out. Thank you all our listeners for tuning in. Stay tuned tomorrow. We're going to try to go live on the ground tomorrow. But welcome to Real Talk with the number one doctors. I'll be calling our caller that called in today, 5309. And be out there tomorrow, selling arena at the Jerry Dyer's Gala. Be there at 5 o'clock. Bring your pots, pans, signs, bullhorns, and everything, crying babies and all. Whistles and everything. We're going to support this family, the Noble family, our brother Noble family, mother, father, relative.